undergraduate student is arrested by ICE in her residential housing after agents using false pretenses got into her apartment building. Back in a minute.
Well, when I first entered this country, a stranger came.
This country, rendition by Nora Brown and Stephanie Coleman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Here in New York City, a Columbia undergraduate student was detained by ICE agents early Thursday morning at her off-campus residence. The agents gained entry to the residential building by pretending to be police looking for a missing child. The student, Amara Agieva, posted about her arrest early in the morning on Instagram saying, quote, DHS illegally arrested me. Please help. She was released just hours later following a meeting between New York Mayor Zohran Mamdani and President Trump. Mamdani posted on social media, quote, just got off the phone with President Trump in our meeting earlier. I shared my concerns about Columbia student Almina Agieva, who was detained by ICE this morning. He's just informed me she will be released imminently. During Mamdani's meeting with Trump, he also requested four other cases in New York be dropped, those of Mahmoud Khalil, Yonseo Chung, Mohsen Madawi, and Lekha Korja. This is Columbia University President Claire Shipman.
We are all so relieved that our student, Eli Agieva, has been released from federal custody. Let me give you some details about what happened this morning. Shortly after 6 a.m., five federal agents from the Department of Homeland Security, without any kind of warrant, entered an off-campus Columbia residential building. The agents gained entry by stating they were police searching for a missing child. They made their way to the apartment of the student they were targeting with the same story. Our security cameras captured the agents in the hallway showing pictures of the alleged missing child. Once inside the apartment, it became clear they had misrepresented themselves. A public safety officer arrived, asked multiple times for a warrant, which was not produced, and asked for time to call his boss, which was not given. The agents took our student. This was a frightening and fast-moving situation and utterly unacceptable for our students and staff. We started work immediately to gain her release. We are so grateful for the help and support we got from the mayor and the governor. Let me be clear. Misrepresenting identity and other facts to gain access to a residential building is a breach of protocol. All law enforcement agencies are obligated to follow established legal, ethical standards. Let me also add, nobody in our administration has ever provided any assistance to DHS or ICE as regards arresting or taking any of our students. Quite the opposite. We have labored often intensively behind the scenes to see them supported.
That was Columbia President Eli Agieva describing, that was Columbia President Claire Shipman responding to the arrest of Eli Agieva, the detention of her. She didn't release a video talking about Mayor Mamdani's request for the four other students to have their cases dropped. We're going to speak with Columbia graduate Mohsen Madawi, one of the people who wasn't a Columbia student. Lekha Korja is still in detention almost a year after participating in pro-Palestinian protests at Columbia. But first, we're going to Washington, D.C., where we're joined by Prem Thakkar, political correspondent and columnist for Zatayo News. On Thursday, he reported on the dizzying sequence of events and the arrest and the release of Ellie. Prem, can you respond to what took place yesterday? Using false pretenses, saying they were New York police, apparently, this is ICE, to get into Columbia's residential housing and using a picture of a five-year-old child to say they were looking for a missing person?
Thank you both for having me. Yes, it, when you lay it out, it's as shocking as it sounds. And I'll tell you what, when I was first made aware of it, I was getting flashbacks to when I was first flagged of Mahmoud Khalil's taking almost a year ago. As you say, the sort of dizzying nature of it was descriptive of it. At first, it was very clear to me, based on different accounts from sources, that something awry had gone on with how DHS had sought to breach this Columbia building. Claire Shipman, the president, very quickly, as she announced it, had said that there were some false pretenses being had and how the agents had tried to get in. And even over the course of the following hours, before Shipman made that subsequent announcement in the evening that you described, many sources were describing to me the sense that something was wrong, that the agents had impersonated officers, that they were there pretending to be doing something they weren't. And I just want to underscore something that is important, I think, for viewers to understand. Right now, the Department of Homeland Security's budget, its very bloated budget, is at stake because of massive public horror at its acts, including the killings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy. In that time, this is how DHS is choosing to behave. They are allegedly impersonating officers, pretending to be looking for a missing child, all to get into a university building to detain someone. And then, I might add, apparently lying about it. Because when we asked DHS about this, they explicitly said our agents did not and would never impersonate NYPD officers. And yet, Claire Shipman, the president of Columbia, is saying, and based on security camera footage, that these agents did, in fact, impersonate police. So this is how DHS is behaving, even while their budget is at stake. And if that is the case, what does that tell you as an American about how DHS takes your concerns?
And Prem, what can you tell us in terms of this involvement of Mayor Mamdani in getting Trump to release Eli Aguieva?
Yes. So one thing that should be underscored, and I'm sure this will be talked about more with Mohsen as well, is that yesterday was a remarkable expression from city officials, from city council folks to members of Congress in New York City to, of course, Zoran Mamdani. That was very concerted, very synchronized in expressing condemnation to this arrest. And that also included, of course, Columbia's strong response. They were in very outwardly insistent on how they were legally supporting Ellie, something that they didn't always express with previous detentions. And so all that culminated in Zoran Mamdani's surprise afternoon visit to Washington, D.C., which coincided with this arrest, funnily enough, I suppose, where he was visiting Donald Trump to pitch a housing project, a very ambitious housing project that he could request Donald Trump's support in. During that meeting is when Zoran Mamdani also expressed his concerns about the arrest of Ellie, as well as you mentioned, the ongoing cases against Mahmoud Khalil, Yun So Chung, Lika Cordia, who is, of course, still in detention, and then Mohsen Madawi. Minutes later, after that meeting, Mamdani gets a phone call from Trump saying that Ellie will be imminent released. And then moments after that, Ellie posts on her Instagram story saying she is freed. And so that instantaneous reaction by Donald Trump to go ahead and make a phone call to release Ellie is remarkable, not just because of how quickly that was able to be done, but because it really puts a thumb in the face of DHS, who, you know, lied in order to breach a Columbia University campus building to detain someone. And all for that decision to be quickly flipped is remarkable because it shows the power of opposition, but also how loose and flippant these arrests are and how maybe unnecessary they are.
So let's go to one of the people who Mayor Mamdani raised. In addition to calling for the release of Ellie, which happened immediately, Mayor Mamdani called for the dismissal of cases against the Columbia student, now graduate, Mahmoud Khalil, Yun So Chung, Mohsen Madawi, who, like Yun So Chung and Mahmoud Khalil, and Lika Cordia, who was involved with pro-Palestinian protests at Columbia, were all jailed The question is, did Colombia intervene in those cases? Mohsen Madawi is now a graduate student at Columbia School of International Affairs, SIPA. Mohsen, if you can talk about your response to what happened yesterday. There was mass protest. Hundreds of people came out to protest Ellie's arrest and the shock of that. But also who President Shipman is willing to talk about and who and intervene on behalf of and who she isn't.
Good morning, Amy, and thank you for having me. This highlights the serious hypocrisy and discrimination that Columbia University has. I'm glad that the president, Claire Shipman, has shared that she is thrilled and relieved for the release of Ellie, as she should. And she should also check on her, meet with her, offer her with the support legally, legal support, psychological support, and financial support after this terror. But let's be clear. Colombia has participated in allowing this to happen. And that's because they have failed to stand up for their students, for me, for Mahmoud, for Yunsu, and for Ranjana, and for Lekia as well. And what we see, DHS coming back to Colombia Residential, because Columbia University administration did not have the backbone, in fact, to file any lawsuits against the Trump administration for violating basic rights. And now, yes, she is free, but will Columbia University file a lawsuit based on this scam that DHS have done? Where is the accountability in this? In addition to this, Amy, I want the viewers to ask the question, why students are protesting at the streets, not inside campus? And the reason is because the university administration itself has participated in destroying and in deteriorating the democratic practices here, free speech. They chilled the speech on campus to the point that the students feel more safe being under the risk of being detained or attacked by ICE or police outside of campus because the university has cracked down against the pro-Palestine movements and has made an example of more than 100 students between suspension and expulsion. This is the chilling effect that the university administration and the dirty work that it is doing. I love my university, and that's the reason why I chose to come to Colombia. But what the senior administration is doing and the hypocrisy that we are seeing, when I was released, there was not a video. There was not a word that says I'm thrilled and relieved. And there has not been any attempt to reach out to me and to offer me direct support by the senior administration. This is an issue, might seem like a micro issue, but this is actually what the Trump's administration intended to do, which is to fracture liberal institutions and turn the administrations against their students. And they have succeeded because the Colombia administration and many other administrations have capitulated and have made deals with the Trump administration.
The impact on the student body, especially the graduate students, given that such a large percentage, I've heard as many as 40% of graduate students at Columbia are international students from other countries. The impact of this continued repression of Columbia against dissent by students?
The impact is huge. And when we talk about 40%, it is more than one third of the university. And we're talking about 14,000 students, roughly. I was in DC yesterday, and the shock wave of this, or the wave shock of this terror that ICE have brought to campus, triggering so many students who were here when many other students were detained on campus, has actually chilled, like it has scared many students. And my phone was like literally tens of messages that are coming to me from international students and from actually students who are citizens, either checking on me if I am okay because they have not disclosed the name first, or asking for legal resources because they are afraid to leave their apartments and campus, the international students. And the chilling effect is real because I see it in classes. Even when I speak, like, especially when I speak with my fellow students who are international, about their mind, about their way of thinking, they are afraid to write their beliefs on papers because they don't trust the university that it would keep those papers and their thoughts away from the government. This is the chilling speech.
Mahsa Madawi, thank you for being with us. He is a Columbia University graduate student today. He was jailed when he was a Columbia undergraduate student, came from the occupied West Bank, as was Mahmoud Khalil, who also graduated but was jailed after pro-Palestinian protests. And La Concordia still is in jail. She's not a student, but she protested the policies of Columbia University at the encampment, and she remains in a Texas ICE jail after almost a year. I want to thank you, Mohsen, for being with us. I'm Prem Thakkar, political correspondent and columnist for Zateo News. Up next, we go to Buffalo, where a Burmese refugee legally here was left by immigration agents in the cold and died. His family did not know where he was. Back in 20 seconds. First Unto This Country, rendition by Nora Brown and Stephanie Coleman at the Brooklyn Folk Festival. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report, as we turn to a horrifying story out of Buffalo, New York. It has sent shockwaves through the community where a disabled Rohingya refugee from Burma, also known as Myanmar, was found dead 5 days after he was abandoned by Border Patrol agents about 5 miles from his home. 56-year-old Nurulamin Shah Alam was mostly blind, spoke no English, in the country legally. His family told reporters no one at the Department of Homeland Security warned them or his lawyers that he'd been released from jail last Thursday and dropped off alone outside a closed coffee shop on a cold winter night. He wandered around in orange booties issued by the Erie County Holding Center for days before Buffalo police found his dead body on Tuesday. Buffalo Mayor Sean Ryan excoriated CBP at a press conference Thursday.
I issued an order a few weeks ago saying the Buffalo Police Department will not interact or help the Department of Homeland Security in their civil immigration enforcement actions. The incident that we're talking about makes it so, of course, we shouldn't, because the Department of Homeland Security, Border Patrol, and ICE, they don't know what they're doing. And it's been demonstrated a Border Patrol agent picked up this man from the holding center custody, drove him to an ICE facility, and the ICE facility said, we don't want this guy. And then the Border Patrol officers had no protocol of what to do with the disabled man who doesn't speak English, who is confused and lost. And you know what they did? They dropped him at a closed coffee shop. That's why we do not cooperate with ICE, Homeland Security, and Border Patrol.
That's the Buffalo mayor, as congressional leaders and others across New York demand answers. Calls for an investigation into the Border Patrol are growing louder. For more, we're joined from Buffalo by J. Dale Shoemaker, a reporter for Investigative Post who's been closely following this story and attended Nurulamin Shah Alam's funeral yesterday. Thank you so much for being with us. Can you explain how this happened? His family did not know that Customs and Border Patrol had left him in the cold at night and he died there?
Yeah, so the key issue here seems to be a miscommunication on whose part we're still trying to figure out as to which immigration agency was going to take custody of Mr. Shah Alam after he was released from the holding center. His attorneys believed it was ICE who was going to take custody of him, and so they were waiting for him at the local ICE detention center the next day to get him out. His attorneys had confirmed, in fact, that ICE did not want custody of him. ICE's attorney said, you know, we don't want this guy. In fact, it was Border Patrol who the Erie County Sheriff's Office called. They took him in their system, saw that ICE didn't want to have custody of him. And then instead of, in their words, releasing him from the Border Patrol station, gave him a quote unquote courtesy ride to the closed Tim Hortons. My colleague was there the other day and confirmed that while the drive-through of that coffee shop was open, the lobby was not. He was not able to enter and sit down in the quote unquote warm, safe location that Border Patrol said it was. He then wandered the city for several days. When the 911 call came in, the woman who called said that she had seen him 3 hours earlier alive, but did not call until 3 hours later when he was dead. This is somewhat ironic because Buffalo calls itself the city of good neighbors, yet there were many people over the course of those 5 days who saw him, perhaps even interacted with him, and did nothing.
But Dale, this was a person who was a refugee in the country. What have you been able to tell about why he was jailed for a year originally?
So this is a tragic situation. He was resettled in Buffalo by one of our refugee resettlement agencies. He was living in Malaysia for a period of about a decade, I'm told, before eventually being allowed into the United States as a legal refugee in December of 2024. Now, as I'm sure you know, the winters in Buffalo are pretty cold, and he was used to warmer climates. So he and his family were cooped up in their new home in Buffalo for several weeks. We had a sunny day in February last year, and he decided to venture outside for a walk. He is nearly blind. He's got totally no vision in one eye, and he has partial, a little bit blurry vision in another eye. He sets out for a walk in his neighborhood in the west side of Buffalo and makes his way to a store where he purchases a curtain rod to use as a walking stick. When the weather turned bad, he got lost in the neighborhood, which, again, he was new to. He ends up in the backyard of a woman on Tonawanda Street. And when he's there, the woman thinks he's breaking in. She says he let the dog out when he went into the backyard. Police roll up and they come in hot. We got the body camera footage yesterday showing that the moment that officers arrive, they are screaming at him to drop his weapon. That's his curtain rod, and to, submit for arrest, basically. In the body camera footage that we reviewed, say after he is in handcuffs that they nearly pulled out their guns and shot him. He is then charged with assault. He, again, speaks no English, so he had no idea what was going on. He had no idea where he was or what these officers were ordering him to do. So once he is, you know, on the ground with these officers, he does bite them at one point, and he gets charged with assault. He is taken to the jail, and at that time, the attorneys and the family agree that if he was bailed out at that point in time, ICE would take custody of him, and he might get disappeared into the ICE detention system in the United States, or possibly even deported to a country that he was not familiar with.
Dale, we just have 30 seconds. Your final words.
Yeah. So instead of letting him get bailed out, they let him sit there. He pleads out earlier this year, and that is when the issue with Border Patrol happens. They pick him up with no notice, no warning, and they drop him at the coffee shop.
And his family reported him missing, and the next thing they knew, he was found dead in the cold. J. Dale Shoemaker, I want to thank you for being with us, reporter for Investigative Post. We'll link to your piece headlined Blind Refugee Abandoned by Border Patrol is Dead. Dale attended Nur al-Amin Shah Alam's funeral on Thursday. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We spend the rest of the hour with former Democratic Congresswoman for Missouri and current candidate for Congress, Cori Bush. First elected to the U.S. House in 2020 to represent St. Louis and the surrounding areas. It represents St. Louis and Ferguson. Cori Bush is seeking to reclaim her former congressional seat after losing to her opponent, Congressmember Wesley Bell in a heated Democratic primary in 2024. The super PAC affiliated with AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, spent more than $8 million to unseat Congressmember Bush over her criticism of Israel's war on Gaza. When she was first elected to Congress in 2020, she was a single mom and a nurse. She was also formerly unhoused and a leader in the 2014 Ferguson uprising over the police killing of 18-year-old Michael Brown. She joins us now in our New York City studio. Welcome to Democracy Now! So you lost your seat in Congress, but you're aiming to take it back. Why? What do you feel needs to happen right now?
Well, first of all, I believe that the seat was stolen, you know, and stolen in what I mean by that is the people of St. Louis did not make the decision based upon truth on what they believe would be you know, someone else coming in that was going to do a better job, get things done quicker. They made the decision to elect someone else based on lies, deceit, a bunch of ads in a total of 15 million, including AIPAC and their affiliates and their allies. $15 million spent on the airwaves, spent on radio, internet, saying that Cori Bush, you know, she's basically mean to Joe Biden. She's not a real Democrat. You know, just spewing lies and misinformation. And there was just so much. $15 million in the St. Louis media market. It's just, it was really heavy. But the thing is, I was doing the work for my community. I was doing the work for the district. I was doing the work for this country. And I was doing exactly what I said that I would do when I was running, even before I started running. I was championing the Equal Rights Amendment, championing houselessness and, you know, and a livable wage, Medicare for all, and so many other areas, championing reparations and actually showing up for my community. The thing is this. I was a fighter in Congress before it was, you know, cool again, I'll say. You know, a fighter where people felt like, well, Cori Bush, you know, you're just a little too aggressive. You know, why would you camp out on the steps of the U.S. Capitol, you know, to get an extension of the eviction moratorium in 2021? Don't you know that's undignified to camp out? But to me, what was undignified was allowing 11 million people to become unhoused during a deadly pandemic when we just needed, you know, we needed more results from our federal government. 7,000 of those people in my district. So I'm running again because the person in the seat is not, he's not meeting the moment. And he's someone that was basically placed there to quiet Cori Bush, placed there to stop a movement, placed there because they didn't want someone speaking out for the people of Palestine, speaking out for human rights and civil rights. They didn't want someone who was coming against Project 2025. They didn't want that loud voice. But that's what they're about to get again.
And also, a report by Axios says that the autopsy by the Democratic National Committee on the 2024 election that has not yet been released concluded that that Kamala Harris lost significant support because of the administration's policy on Gaza. Is the Democratic Party heading in the same direction again?
I would hope not. I hope they're listening. And even though that autopsy has not, you know, really been released, but for us to have the information that we do have, we have to listen. You know, I think back to when President Biden was running in 2020 and we were in a pandemic, but people showed out in huge numbers because we were already, millions of people were hitting the streets after the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many others. People were hitting the streets and we were looking for someone that would at least be you know, amenable to what we wanted to see as far as police accountability. And so we showed up to support that candidate, and that was Joe Biden. Right now, what people have to see is people sat out in 2024, but people sat it out saying, hey, listen to us, and they didn't feel heard, and they weren't heard. So now, pay attention, listen now, and don't blame it on the people when one or two other people could have made a different decision.
Interesting, you're here in New York, as Mayor Mamdani just met with President Trump again yesterday, talking about housing, an issue that you were one of the major proponents of when you were in Congress. Cori Bush, former Democratic Congresswoman from Missouri, hopes to take her seat again, first elected in 2020. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Diverse, independent, yours. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC.
My name's Eric Swanson, and I'm a dad of two young girls. It was a game changer when we learned that $10 a day childcare was being offered to both our kids. And we want all BC families to have this option. To get there, BC has to do three key things. Pay fair and consistent wages for all childcare educators. Transition all existing programs to $10 a day. And plan childcare expansion more like we do schools and hospitals. BC's on the right track, but we need to go faster. Go to 10aday.ca to learn more.
Hello, you are listening to CJ.